Okay, so now the plan is the following. I will talk just a little bit more about the Hopfield model in connection with these experiments, which I just started to talk about before the lunch. Then David will take over, we'll talk about the sequences, and then we will run discussion about the experiments with Udi Zohari, who will show some of his data, and then all of you will be urged to contribute to the discussion and to share your thoughts about the memories and how it can work in the brain. Okay, so what I want to do is now to tell you about one of the ideas of how could these correlations emerge in the Hopfield model. So if I said, as I said, the thing here which is very different from the Hopfield model is this result of the correlation. So the monkey had to learn the pictures in the given order. So the monkey was seeing these pictures again and again in the given order without knowing about it or without having to know about it. And then when the recordings began, the experiment started, and then the order was broken. So during the experiment, during the actual experiment, these pictures were shown in the random order, right? But you could still label them according to the order during the learning. And so if you do this, and then if you record from a neuron and you see what pictures elicit this enhanced delay activity, you see that there is a grouping here, a clustering, that the pictures which evoke the highest response are clustered in this learning sequence. Although now they are presented at random, so you do it offline. So this means that the attractors which are formed there are not independent anymore, although the pictures themselves look completely randomly and there is clearly no similarity between the neighboring pictures. They were ordered randomly, even if there is some uncontrolled correlations here, but it has nothing to do with the order in which the pictures were presented, and yet the order was very important here in this response. So you have some quantification, which I won't go into this, which quantifies the degree of correlation as a function of separation, and you see there is this up to the separation of 5, there is this correlation. So you have a situation where you learn the pictures which are uncorrelated, or at least there are no controlled correlations, but you learn them in a fixed order, and this affects very strongly the nature of the attractors. So clearly the Hopfield model cannot capture this, and the question is, how can this come about? So when we saw this data, we had a lot of head scratching, trying to come up with some ideas about how these correlations could arise. And finally, there was an idea which Meir and Grinyasti came up with about how you can modify the Hopfield model to reproduce this data. And the idea is the following. So you just add one extra term to the Hopfield matrix. You say, when you learn the patterns first, what you have is the usual term. Okay, so this is the usual term, which is invariant to the order, right? If you take the patterns and show them in the different order, there will be no difference in terms of this matrix. But now you say there is another term here which is sensitive to the order. Okay, which connects the consecutive patterns. So if the patterns are shown in a particular order, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, etc. So this term connects or somehow puts together the neighbors, right? So it depends. Every time the next pattern is shown, there is some term in the connection matrix which puts these patterns together. Now, how can you imagine this be done? For example, if you can somehow imagine this simple scheme where you first learn the patterns individually, And then if you see one pattern, psi I, let's say, psi 1, and then after some delay you see the pattern psi 2, the activity due to this pattern can be carried here. And Udi Zohari will talk more about it, because he actually did experiments to test this. And then when the next pattern is presented, you still have a memory trace from the previous one. And then you come with a stimulus which corresponds to the next one, and you have an activity which is some superposition of two. And that's why if you have this Hebbian modification, you may have these cross terms generated into the matrix. Now, it turns out that this can explain the correlations in the following way. So let's now write down what happens if you now come with a stimulus again which corresponds to a particular pattern. So let's say you start the network from the state which corresponds to some particular pattern, let's say psi I 5, just for concreteness. So what will happen to it? Whether it will be a fixed point or something else happens. So again, you have to compute the input, which is sum over j, jij, psi j 5. So the first term will be the same. It will be sum over mu, as I did many times already this morning. Okay, so this will be every pattern weighted according to its correlation with the pattern number 5. So let's imagine, let's take the simplest case where there are not many patterns and they're all uncorrelated, so the only term which will survive here will be the mu equals 5, right? So you don't have any interference, so just ignore the issue of capacity and so on. Okay, so this is what comes from this term, right? Plus interference terms, which I just ignore. Then you have what comes from this term. So what comes from this term is A times psi I 4 plus psi I 6, right? Because there will be a term. Right, can you see that it would be 4 and 6? From this term will come 4, from this term will come 6. Okay, so this will be the input which every neuron will see. And it means that at the next step, the activity of this neuron will be the sign of this. Or if you wish to compute the overlap with the pattern number 5 again at the next step. So at the beginning it was 1, and the next step it will be average of psi 5 times this sign. Average of psi, or average of all sides. Okay, so now let's look at this equation. So it all now depends on the amplitude of A. If A was 0, we were back at the Hopfield model, and so the pattern would be a stable fixed point because all you had was this signal term, and the M at the next step would still be 1. Now, if A is non-zero but less than half, it still doesn't change anything, right? Because you can see from here that if A is less than half, this term will never dominate this one, right? Because no matter what psi is R, this is less than 1. And so if you have a plus minus 1 here, and you add something which is less than 1, the sign cannot be changed. Right? So all A less than 1 half cases are exactly like in the Hopfield model. No difference. Okay, so every pattern is still a stable fixed point, and the memories are still coinciding with psi, so no correlation. However, if A is bigger than 0.5, then for some, in some cases, this term will overcome this, and it will push the neuron into either the state of psi 4 or psi 6. Right? Because there will be some cases where one of these terms will overcome the rest. So let's say this will, let's say this is plus 1, this is minus 1, and this is plus 1. Okay, and this is plus 1. Well, let's say this is minus 1, sorry. Okay, so for the neurons for which the fifth pattern is at 1, but fourth and sixth is at minus 1, it will go to minus 1 state, right? It will be overcome by the neighboring patterns. Because this will become, if A is bigger than half, this will become bigger than this one. So the neuron will flip into the state corresponding to this neighboring pattern. So it will not stay in the state of this pattern, it will go to the state corresponding to this one. Okay, so you see that for this to happen, these both need to have an opposite sign from this one. So in a quarter of the cases, this will happen. So if it means that if you compute now the overlaps with the fourth and sixth pattern, they will become positive at the next step, right? You will have a spread of the errors will be generated such that you will start getting overlaps with the neighboring patterns. You come with the fifth pattern, but at the next step, you will start seeing non-zero correlation with the fourth and sixth pattern. You can actually compute. I don't remember. How, it's probably something like 0.25. If you take carefully the averages here. Okay, so you start, this is the new, this is let's say fifth, four, six. This is the value of the overlap. Let's say you start with the one overlap here. At the next step, you'll get something like this. And then you see at the next step, you will get another overlap with the next patterns. And so eventually, after a few iterations, you end up with the profile of overlaps, which will be something like this. So I guess I have a solution here. Okay, so this will be a fixed point solution for the overlaps, right? You start, let's say, with the overlaps number 7 being 1 and the rest are 0. So you present the pattern number 7. And then after a few iterations, you see this profile of the overlap. So you will get a state which is not only correlated with pattern number 7, but it's correlated with all patterns up to 3 here and 11 here, right? So this will make it about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 9. Yeah, but basically, mostly you'll have 4 big overlaps and the rest will be very small. Okay? This is the fixed point solution of these equations, which I wrote down, for A, which is bigger than 1/2. Now, the interesting thing is that it's the same for any A, which is bigger than 1/2. You can show that at the beginning, this shape is universal. As long as A is bigger than 1/2 and less than 1, you always get the same solution. Right? So if A is less than 1/2, you get just one overlap, so the pattern remains stable. As long as you cross 1/2 and you don't go above 1, you'll get this stereotype shape of the solution. Right? So every attractor will be a mixture. So it's like a mixture state, but in this case, it's not a random mixture of patterns. It's a mixture of neighboring patterns with a very well-defined amplitude. Right? So it takes the pattern which was a stimulus, and it takes it with the overlap about 0.5. Then it takes two neighbors with the overlap of 0.35. The next neighbor with the overlap about 0.5, 0.1, and then then it's almost negligible. Right? Okay, so this happens if you stimulate the network with the pattern number 7. Now it's clear if you simulate it with a pattern number 10, let's say you'll get the same solution but shifted here, right? You'll get another attractor here. And now you see that these attractors will not be independent. In the case of patterns, they were independent or uncorrelated. The attractor number 7 and 8 were completely uncorrelated. But here, if you go to the attractor which is evoked by the pattern 7 and the attractor which is evoked by the pattern 8, they will have the same, almost the same composition, right? Because there will be just a shift by 1 here, but the width of the attractor is about 5. So as long as you are staying close here, the attractors will end up being correlated. But if you go farther than the width, they will not be correlated again, right? So the correlation between attractors, and this is again independent on A for in this binary model. This is independent on A. So you can, I don't know if I can find this. Yeah. So this is kind of correlations which you find between the attractors. And some, in a bit more detailed model, but it doesn't matter. This is the general shape of the correlations which you have. So it decays and disappears after about separation of 5. Okay, so this could be a mechanism of generating. So the new idea here is that the nature of the attractors is not only sensitive to the patterns which you want to memorize, but it can also be sensitive to the context, because if you memorize the pattern in the context of the previous patterns which were just being retrieved, this may affect the structure of the connection matrix which you have, if you have like some local Hebbian rule. And this may create this interesting possibility that the structure of the matrix which you end up with will be sensitive to both the patterns which you try to memorize and also to the context in which you try to memorize. So you can take the same patterns, and if you memorize them, let's say, in the different order, in the different context, you will end up with a completely different connection matrix. So the attractors will be very different. So they somehow sensitive to this context exactly the way how you memorize the pattern. So this, I think, make the whole idea more biologically realistic, because it's hard to imagine that you have a stereotyped attractor, let's say, for your grandmother, which will stay forever, and if you see her with the interval of 10 years, you would activate the same like groups of neurons. This allows for the possibility for some flexibility. So if you in the middle you learn new things, this may also change the attractors for the old things, but they would still be the most important thing, that they should still be in the one-to-one correspondence with the stimuli, right? So you would still don't want to mix up completely the attractors. You want to keep the correspondence between the stimulus which evokes the attractor and the nature of the attractor, but it doesn't have to be completely complete identity there. Okay, so now David, your turn. Thanks. You want to go on the record?
On the record? Maybe this should be off the record.